Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the book, Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome, I'm all covered up, sorry, Terry C. from New Jersey. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And thanks to, I think Jessica invited me. Thank you so much. So my name is Terry. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I spent most of my day celebrating Mother's Day. So happy Mother's Day to all the nurturers out there. You don't have to be a mother to celebrate Mother's Day. It's interesting that this meeting asked the speaker to talk about how they recovered as a result of following the directions in the Big Book. At least that's what I think I read. And so as I prayed for direction on, you know, what I would say tonight, I was just led to the index, just led to the table of contents. And I guess a couple things, you know, I'm a believer of this book, but I'm not a worshiper of this book. This book has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. It's given me access to a God that's given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. But it was so much fun to kind of look at the book today and just think about my history with my recovery in and out of this book, but also my present day recovery in and out of this book. And so try to intermingle both, because that's what kept coming to me, you know, the experience of long ago. And I'm a person who's been in Overeaters Anonymous for 31 years. So it'll be actually almost 31 years. It'll be 31 years for me later this year in the fall. Have I been abstinent that long? Definitely not. But I did. I was able to put down my alcoholic foods very early in recovery. I consider early when you say I have, you know, 30 plus years and my alcoholic foods were put down 2 to 3 years after I was in. To me, in God's time, that is definitely a short period, a very, very minute period of time. My spiritual recovery, however, which to me is more about what recovery is about, that, interestingly enough, really didn't flourish until I was introduced to this book. It really didn't. It really had very little meaning to me, very little meaning. I wasn't a person who came in to get the diet. I just came in because I couldn't, I was tired of being sick and tired. You know, I'm 5'1" and a half. I was over 220 pounds. And my life was everything it says on page 52 in the Bedevilments, and worse and worse. So kind of just looking at this, I wasn't introduced to the Big Book until about 14 years ago. So that shows you how long I was in, if you do the math, before I actually learned about the book. But just want to kind of go through it and kind of reflect then in between and now. And, you know, when I look at those first 30 pages and the doctor's opinion, which is, you know, 30 plus pages, I think almost 40, I think, or 40 something. And that part of the book is trying to teach me. And I, you know, when I first got introduced to the Big Book, I didn't study the book. I didn't understand that might not be a bad idea. Actually, my first 16 years in the program, I didn't go to a lot of meetings where we used the book. And if we did, we read the stories, and I just thought it was the Reader's Digest of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, that's what it seemed like to me. I had no idea there were directions. And still to this day, if you're like me, you study the book or you see the book and you realize, well, that's always been taught to me as a direction, but that's not really a direction. Or I never realized that was a direction. Like, wow, that really tells me. Or wow, like, and this is my last few years in recovery, that's something I identify with. Like, I can hang my head on that statement. But let me just go back. The doctor's opinion and Bill's story, and just the whole idea of really understanding, like that one line in Bill's story where he says, alcohol was my master, food was my master. I look back 30 years ago, food was my master. It, you know, it was the only thing I could rely on. And today what the book has taught me is that I was who I was relying on, and the food became necessary for all of that torture that happens when you can't rely on yourself because there's no God in the picture, you know? And the other thing, like when I look at the doctor's opinion, you know, and I identify with, I ate essentially because I liked the effect. You know, that's why I ate. I liked the effect, but the food's not the problem. We all learn that. The food is the symptom. The problem goes much deeper, and it's not anything about my body or the weight or the foods I was eating or that sort of thing. The book tells me, you know, selfish self-centeredness is the root of my problem. Like, it spells that out for me. It spells that out. And when I look at what my world was when I came in here at 220 pounds and displeased with everyone in life, especially me, that shows me the root. Like, I was so focused on, first of all, I was focused on playing God. And like I said, the frustration of that leads to the food. Today, though, I just want to mention this. Today, though, I am so clear when I read this book, what it's telling me is, I could have that food down and I can still die a compulsive overeater's death. I don't have to die an active compulsive overeater to die a compulsive overeater's death. What that book tells me today is, it's my thinking. It is my thinking and my view of, or not my view, but my lack of reliance on God that will kill me. Self-will will kill me. Any, you know, it's never going to be, my life's never going to be successful if I rely on self-will. And what is the opposite of successful? It's going to fail. It's going to fail. So, you know, Bill on page 13, which is like one of my favorite pages for in Bill's story. I've turned page 13 into a prayer, and he says, I placed myself, okay, hold on a second. I'm losing battery here. I might have to go get my charger. I had no idea it was this bad. He said, you know, he talks about, I placed myself unreservedly under your care and direction on page 13. If I dial back to my life when I walked in here, the only care and direction I cared about was mine. That was it. My care and direction. There was no other care and direction. And I was a person who grew up with a faith, but not a God who was personal to me. I grew up with a faith, an understanding of a God. And that understanding was a wrathful, punishing God. At least that's all I heard. Let me clarify that. No one taught me that directly. That's what I heard. So, you know, coming in here, being grossly obese for my height, having, you know, the same life everybody else has, losses and gains, you know, and I'm not talking about weight. I'm talking about, you know, just life, losses and gains, you know, just life. You know, I was who I relied on. Like like somebody said in one of my home group meetings, she used to say, you know, I was always on my mind. I woke up and I was always on my mind. And so when I think about that line that says selfish self-centeredness is the root of my problems, that's true when I walked in here, and it's true today. It's true today. So I'm going to take a minute to get my charger. You'll have to excuse me, but taking this minute will take away my distraction from being reminded that I have a low battery. So just give me 1 minute to do that. I apologize because I know you're recording. I don't know if you want to take the recording off and put it back on. Tell me what your preference is. Anybody?
Hey, go get your battery.
Sorry about that.
That's the important thing. Dovila, did you want to pause the recording?
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your patience and your understanding. I'm going to try this up a minute because now I have to put it in a different position. And again, I apologize. Okay. So I don't think you need to see me, but you need to hear me. So I'm going to rearrange myself here. Is that okay? Is that okay? Or just you? This is important to me. Okay. That's good enough, right?
That's okay. Good.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience. And I apologize. I had no idea my battery's on low. Surprise, surprise. So anyway, going back to the book. Now I can focus. Going back to the book. So learning about that physical craving early on in the book, I didn't really know that's what I was learning about. I kind of understand it now. Learning about how once I started to eat my alcoholic foods, things were just, you know, I went to the source of the pain to stop the pain. That's what I kept doing over and over and over again, going to the source of the pain to stop the pain. And, oh, I know I was talking about that page on Bill's, I think I was talking about the page on Bill's story when he says, I place myself unreservedly under your care. And then after that, he says, without you, I am lost. Of myself, I am nothing. And I understand that so clearly now. I was lost and I felt like nothing, right? I know now after doing 4 through 9 on a, you know, I'm not going to say regular basis. I don't have a schedule of how I do the steps. I kind of feel guided about when I do steps, you know, step work. But I'm nothing when God is nothing. Like when God has no meaning for me, and is not a part of my, you know, is not, I'm not understanding that he's just there waiting for me. He's always there. And by the way, 2 housekeeping things. I choose to call my higher power God. You'll hear me say it more than any other reference. And are we allowed to use food, talk about food in the meeting, like specific foods, if that slips out? Okay. Okay. So anyway, yeah. So when I came in to the rooms and I realized I had an illness, that is the one thing I didn't learn from the book. I just gathered from a lot of other information that I read and was given when I came in the rooms that I had an illness. And understanding this was a disease was a redemption for me, because I was one of those people who came in and hated myself for the way I handled my life, particularly around the food. So when I came in and I learned that this was a disease, it was like, okay, I could fathom, I could process that. And not that that brought me to spirituality, that didn't bring me to spirituality, but where it brought me was to an understanding that it needs to be treated. And that was part of my motivation for abstinence. This book gave me the understanding of an illness, but not then, not then. Like now it's very clear to me that I know. And I read the doctor's opinion today. I can read it for anything. I can read it for anything. I can read the doctor's opinion and know that alcoholic style behaviors happen all the time. And they are merely things, and this is something I've learned recently, you know, they're merely things that I wish I could stop doing, that I don't know why I'm doing them. And I don't know how to stop myself. I don't. So if it's a powerlessness issue, it's not just about the food, although I know that's my addiction. It could be about a behavior that I know is insane, but I can't stop doing it. You know, I can't stop doing it. So, so anyway, to me, understanding the physical craving and understanding the mental obsession of this disease was something, I don't know about you, but I needed to go through the book quite a few times before I really got that. Like I really needed to. The doctor's opinion was so easy to grasp, the allergy concept. Like, wow, yes. Like when I eat two Oreos and put the bag away, the bag stays right here. The idea of the bag until I go to the bag and get the bag again and finish the bag. My husband eats two Oreos, puts the bag away and forgets they're there. He actually forgets they're there. I don't know. I don't understand that kind of behavior.
15 minutes.
Oh, thank you so much. So, yeah. When it comes to meat and food, food's always going to win. And it says at the end of More About Alcoholism, and this is the line that I grabbed onto the minute I read it, and I've never let go of. Once more, I have no defense against the first bite. My defense must come from a higher power. My defense must come from God. And so in that second step, right? In that second step, it became easy. If I grabbed onto that line, the second step became easier for me because I had a God I knew about, but I didn't have a God I believed in. I had a God I knew about, but I didn't have a God that was personal to me and that I felt would help me with this. But on page 52 in the Bedevilments, it says we have to change our point of view. We have to change our point of view. And it doesn't talk about the food and what the food's doing. It talks about what my life's like when I'm in the disease. I have trouble with personal relationships. You know, I have trouble with my emotional nature. You know, these are the things I have trouble with, but I have to change my point of view. And the point of view that I really understand today that I need to change is as long as I keep relying on myself, even in recovery, you know, because there have been times leading up to now in my spiritual recovery where I thought recovery was trying to be a better person, doing what I know was the suggestions of the book and sprinkling in kind of some kind of spiritual fitness exercises like prayer and meditation or like listening to podcasts, like, you know, doing service, you know, those kinds of things. And today I realized that there is no recipe approach that involves God. There's no recipe. There's no checklist approach that involves God. On page 25, and I'm quoting all my favorite pages, but on page 25, it says, I can go on blotting out the consciousness of my bitter end or accept spiritual help. And to me, that means God's there. That means he never leaves, doesn't say, find it, look for it, seek it, says, accept it. So let me kind of go on and say, coming in and really understanding the fourth through ninth step, the only time I understood that was by studying this book. I didn't understand it any other way. And it was hard to really get the understanding that I have today, which, you know, my first few four through nines were really about seeing that I had a part, that I had a part that I caused some damage, that I had a part. I really wasn't really clear on the fact that objectionable behavior isn't just bad behavior to other people. Objectionable behavior is doing things to myself that are unkind. And I'm not talking about the obvious, like things like self-harm or clinical things that you may hear about. I'm talking about how hard I work at trying to be better because I think I'm so not. How hard I try to get you to like me because I think I'm unlikable. Those are the things I'm talking about. And then I have to look at, how do I do these things to God? You know, how do I do these things to God? Do I bring to God the things that I know only God's going to be able to help me with? Or am I still looking for that third choice? Am I still looking, you know, is it blotting out the consciousness until the bitter end? And sometimes that means I blot out what's going on and still try to fix it. Or am I accepting spiritual help? So that 4 through 5 in particular really now gets me to look more so now than ever. But in the beginning, you know, I'm so grateful that at first I thought it was, you know, I'm not a good enough person. I need to see all the places I'm bad and I need to get right. I can't do any of that. I'm totally powerless over that. I'm totally powerless. Today I have to see I can change nothing. Why does it say in the step 7 prayer, all of me good and bad, all of me good and bad, because I can't change the bad parts. There's a part of me that wants to show up being this perfect version of who I recovered person is supposed to be, who's not going to do that anymore. And guess what? I can't say that. I'm God. If I make an amends to you and I tell you I'm never going to do it again, I'm playing God. Not because I should leave myself leeway to go out and do it again, but because I'm human and I don't know that. I can be sorry for what I've done, or I can regret the behavior, but I can't predict what my behavior is going to be. So I'm kind of running. I didn't realize 30 minutes would go by so fast. But anyway, I guess that it says in the 8th and 9th step is, or it says somewhere, you know, I have to be willing to set the matter straight. But not just, you know, not just with people, with God. You know, it talks about ideals in that 4th step. It talks about that because I need to really look at, what does God really expect from me? And usually God just expects me to rely on him. That's it, plain and simple, just expects me to rely on him. And what is step 10 about? Step 10 is about just keeping that inventory process going. You know, just keeping that inventory process going. I went on vacation last week and I really got to see that I'm on vacation, but that doesn't change my need to look at my behavior. That doesn't change my need to rely on God. You know, in fact, it probably needed to be ramped up because on vacation, I'm an addict. I think I'm going to Fantasy Island because I'm on vacation and that I'm an addict. That's what I want. And what I really got to see is all of me, good and bad, because good and bad happens on vacation. Good and bad happens tomorrow morning when I get up and have a normal Monday, but it also happens when I'm, you know, miles away from home in that kind of venue. So I think the other thing that I'm so grateful for about this book that it's taught me, and I look at the instructions in 4 through 9 and I think about that fear page, and that is critical to me. And the page I'm talking about is talking about a better way. That's true the minute I read it. It's true probably 10 minutes after I read it. It's probably true, you know, after I get off this meeting tonight. because fear is pervasive. Like, it's pervasive. And, you know, where do I go with that? My continuous work in the steps has showed me where I go with it is still my tendency to try to make it right myself. Try, and even involving God a little, like, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, God, you know, please help me get rid of this fear. I know I need to get rid of this fear. No, I don't know I need to get rid of this fear. I just need to be open to what God's will is and be open to any direction there might be about it, whatever it is. I was with my daughter today, and my daughter is very advanced or very eclectic in her style compared to me. That's what I'll say. Very eclectic in her style compared to me. And I realized my fear of people judging her was me judging her. And if I wasn't conscious of having to look at my side of the street and the fear, where it comes from, the delusion that I'm only going to be okay if she's in the profile I want her to be in, like, that's just, I would have none of that without this program. I would have none of that. I would have ate more today because I would have told myself that I'm being a mother and protective of her. That was all about me. That would be all about me. And I was able to see it. I was able to bring God, you know, access the power that's always there and say, no, love, true love that God gives to me is, God doesn't care what other people think about me, cares nothing about what people. Thank you. I guess, you know, I just want to stress that none of that can ever be an event for me. And it was at one point in my life. 4 through 9 was an event for me. And it can't be that way. It just can't. And that's when I talk about continuous work, that's what I mean. I don't mean like, oh my God, I get in a 18-week workshop and, you know, I rummage through the steps again, seeing, you know, where I'm at fault. Like, no. No, just vigilance about who is it that God wants me to be. It says it right on that fear page, you know? And as I live that way more, I get to see a person who I don't even recognize sometimes, because my spiritual fitness and development is a gift. It's not a plan. It's a gift, you know? So the last thing I guess I just want to share is that in recovery for a very long time, I thought working with others was about service. I got to do service. I got to help people come through. I've come through. I got to help people come through. I realized today that's part of my spiritual journey. And I don't say that in a selfish way. I say that in that it says right on the first page, right, of working with others, that it's the bright spot of our lives. Well, what I've really, really learned is it's the bright spot of my life because I get to stay anchored in the thing that changed my life. Totally brought me into a life I could never imagine. Now, does that mean my life is perfect? You all know that's not true. Does that mean my life is so much better than yours? It just means that I get to have peace in my day, even when it's crappy. I get to have peace. As one of my friends said today, God's always holding me and I'm always exposed, and sometimes it rains. Even when God's holding me, it rains. And I love that analogy when I heard it this morning. So I also want to point out one of the things I've learned that I just love, and that last chapter, working with others, doesn't say rescuing others. It doesn't say saving them from this disease. It doesn't say get them on the right path. It just says work with others. And if we go back to Bill's experience, that's what he did for 6 months and no one got well and he stayed well. So I kind of want to close with a wrap up about step 11, even though I didn't go in the right order, because that step to me today is crucial. It's like so crucial. And, you know, I remember my first juncture in the rooms and even my first juncture with the book, you know, the idea of prayer and meditation. Of course, it's important. Of course, it's important. But today, I realize it's important for every waking moment, every waking moment. Does that mean I spend every waking moment praying, meditating? It means till the day I die, I hope I work toward having conscious contact every moment of the day. Will I accomplish that? I don't know. I don't really think so, because I'm admittedly human. But if I could try that or attempt that or work at that, and I am definitely telling you, I will do my 11-step review tonight and I will say, gee, you really forgot God during that situation. Like that, God didn't pop up anywhere there. Didn't really didn't go into any prayer and meditation or ask for any help there except spiritual help. So, but I love that being the objective. And I'm pretty sure God doesn't mind it either. So I think I'm going to close there, because I'm pretty sure I'm either over or at time. Thank you.